Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Look out, there's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a chocolatier, and I love films. As Chris Jammy once said, I would rather be an artist than a leader. Ironically, a leader has to follow the rules. David Lynch doesn't follow a three-act structure, and I love him so much. Oh, me too, Chris, me too. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Barry Jenkins, Himesh Patel, Mark Frost, Sharon Stone, and even Bled Clambles. But this week, it's the brilliant author Anna Bogatskaya. You can watch all of Ted Lasso now, seasons 1-3 on Apple TV+. And you can watch all of Shrinking, season 1 on Apple TV+. Everything's on Apple TV+. Have a look. You'll love it. Thank you for watching. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where you get an extra 20 minutes with Anna. We talk about secrets. She picks her best beginning and ending to a film. You get all of that. You get the whole episode uncut and ad-free and as a video. Check it out over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. So, Anna Bogatskaya is an author, a critic, a podcaster, and co-founder of the horror collective The Final Girls. She was the very first person to book Films to be Buried With live at the BFI, so I'll always be grateful to her. And she has just written an excellent book called Unlikable Female Characters, which I highly recommend. We recorded this a few weeks back, and she was an absolute delight. And I really think you're going to love this one. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 252 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I'm joined today by a podcaster, a screamer, a final girler, an evil deadite, a successioner, an unlikable female character. Her words, not mine. Kermode Mayo replacement, a critic, a curator, a creator, a writer, and a genius, and a person. Please, welcome to the show. It's the brilliant, here she is, it's Anna Bogatskaya!
I'm stealing all of that. That's going to be my new Twitter bio. Thank you for that.
You can have it. I think I just mispronounced your name by saying Steyer instead of Skaya. Huge apologies.
I think it's fine. I'll take that. It's been pronounced in so many different ways. I don't even know how to properly pronounce it.
How are you, Anna?
I'm great. I'm good. I'm finding it unsettling to be on the other side of these recordings. Like, I'm very used to doing the interviews. I am not used to be interviewed.
It's quite hard, isn't it? I've found when I do other people's podcasts and they ask me questions, I want to go like, "What? Why do you keep asking me stuff?"
Like, why do you want to know?
Yeah, what the fuck?
Who told you?
It's none of your fucking business.
Yeah,
it's literally none of your business. Well, firstly, I will always be grateful to you because you were in the early days of this podcast. I believe it was you that suggested that we do it live at the BFI. Is that right?
It was me.
Yeah.
It was me. That was still one of my favorite events ever.
It was fucking great. We had Will Poulter and it was very exciting. And I'm very grateful to you for that. And the other reason that I'm excited to talk about you, well, you've got your book coming out. It's called Unlikable Female Characters. Would you like to quickly tell us that, even though I've read it, you can tell the people who haven't?
Have you read it really?
Yeah. It's fucking great.
Oh my God. Thank you. Yeah, it's a project that's been in my head for probably like a decade. And then it was very much a pandemic project. And it's all about those characters from film, TV, a little bit of music that you just think, oh, what a bitch, you know, but they're great. But you feel kind of guilty about liking them because the movie or the show is kind of ramming it down your throat that you're supposed to hate them, that they're like a cautionary tale or that you're not supposed to be like them. And I just love them. I've always loved them. So I've basically trolled through as much film and TV history as I physically could within the deadline given to me and kind of written about why they're great and why the way that people talk about them in derogatory terms sometimes actually has a lot to do with misogyny, which is not fun. Mm-hmm. But hopefully the book is fun.
The book is fun. And it also is the thing. Look, as someone who writes stuff and has dealt with producers and notes, there's a thing quite early in your book about the note from executives or whatever, like, this character's not very likable and how are you making this character likable?
Yeah.
And I've always been... I think it's as simple as this sometimes. If the character is the lead, the audience will follow them whatever. Like, as in, I sort of believe that. I can't think of many examples where that's not true, but like... The way stories work is we tell you, you get told a story and you immediately kind of latch on to the lead, whoever the lead is. The lead could be the devil or whatever. And
yeah.
Sometimes things are used as like charm, like bad people are charming. And so that's like, well, but like, you know, the film, of course you do, The Lost Daughter. Like, yes. I thought that was such a fascinating film because she is truly unlikable. Like, as in, she's not even kind of sneaky charming. Like, she's really...
She does not give a shit about being charming.
Yeah.
Like, she's hard work and
she
knows
it.
She's
hard work to sort of be with and you feel for the people around her. And yet it's absolutely compelling and you're totally with her and everything without liking her. It's fascinating.
No, she's amazing. And what I found, like what I've always thought and found is that those sets of rules have always been different from female characters versus male characters. Like you just, you know, when... Male characters are unlikable and they're the lead. You just, like you say, just attach yourself to them, right?
Yeah.
Like you just forgive them anything because you just want to watch more of them. Like Don Draper, you know, Walter White or Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Like, or Henry Hill and Goodfellas or whatnot.
Yeah.
Literally every single character in the Godfather trilogy, all of them, literal murderers. And you're still like, yes, give me another 3-hour movie about these fuckers. But yeah, whenever it's a woman, you're like, I don't like the way she looks. I don't like the way she does not smile. I don't like the way she like wants too much. I like the way that she's too smart.
It's very interesting. I listen, perhaps naively, I feel like that has certainly shifted.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, there's been... Like when I was writing this, I was looking back a lot, but also really enjoying the moment we're in now where there's so many shows, so many movies that have incredible characters as a whole, but amazing female characters in particular. And I was like, I literally was still watching stuff and writing about stuff on the day of the deadline. So I could, by the time I had to finish this and submit it and it was like done, they wouldn't let me add anything else.
Yeah.
Maybe about 5 or 6 new shows, about 10 other movies have come out that I was like, yeah, this would absolutely fit. I mean, can I just go back? Can I write an addendum?
Can you do a sequel?
Can I do a sequel? Yeah, yeah. I would love that.
The other thing I like about you and why I want to talk to you is you are, I think it's fair to say, an obsessive fan of horror.
That is true. That's very true. It's a fact.
And I always like talking to horror people because I've said this before. If you've listened to this podcast, it is amazing how many comedians hate horror or are scared. Like, it's surprising how often it comes up on this podcast. I don't like it. Why would I want to be scared? I don't like it. And
as someone with your, it seems, quite broad tastes in horror, do you have an explanation as to what you get out of it? Because some people would be like, why? Why would you fucking do that? Are you able to articulate it?
Oh, damn. I mean, I'm writing a whole nother book about that precise question, Brett. But so it'll take me like a few more months.
Can you do it in a paragraph instead?
So the genuine earnest answer, which is probably not very funny, is that I think it's so personal to everyone's particular fear. And you rarely want to really say to someone out loud what's the thing that scares you the most, because that's like giving them an advantage over you. Like, why would I tell you the thing that terrifies me the most? You might use it against me, right?
I ask people that every single week. And I will be asking you soon. And then I will use it against you.
Well, exactly. I'll never tell you. I'll block.
I will use it to destroy you. That's what this whole podcast has been about all this time. Just gathering evidence to destroy everyone.
I did something to annoy you at those BFI events, and you've just been waiting for years.
Oh, yeah. I just believed your acting then. I was like, whoa, what did you do? But so, without having to give away your sort of answer to it, do you mean that you think, like, whatever your particular fear is, that's the one type of horror you don't like? Or
exactly.
Okay, so you like everything other than the thing that kind of triggers you.
I think this applies to everyone. Like, if there's one thing that genuinely scares you, and sometimes you don't even know until you just see it accidentally, because, you know, the way that movies are sold to us, you'll be like, oh, it's a possession movie, or it's you know, it's like a haunted house movie, or there's ghosts, so there's slashers and there's killers and whatnot. But if you see something that really messes you up in like a real primal way, you'd be like, why? I don't want this. This is too much. Yeah. And you just decide that all horror is that. Or some people just decide that all horror is blood and guts or slashers. And they'll be like, oh, I don't like that. Or that doesn't scare me. Ergo, horror is not scary. But once they find that one thing that fucks them up, they'd be like, it's actually too personal. It's too much. I don't want to deal with that thing about myself.
You know what? I think it is also the thing of horror and comedy. You know, there is this argument, horror and comedy are very close because of the timing. And because it's like build up, surprise or suspense. Here comes the expected thing. But I think the same thing with comedy. Like, you know, when people, like I've found it, you know, I sort of go like, oh, you can laugh about anything. But if someone says a particular illness that someone in my family has on stage, they make a joke about it, it makes me sad. You know what I mean? Like as in, and if I didn't have that connection to that illness, I'd laugh, I wouldn't care. You know, that's, I suppose it's the same thing. Like, anything, you're up for all horror unless it is the specific thing that has happened to you or that you're scared of.
I'll still watch it though, because I like confronting my fears. But there is something that always like really annoys me, right? Like nobody says, oh, I don't like dramas. Oh, I don't like comedies. Yeah. Oh, I don't like this one big massive genre that has so many different kinds of flavors to it, right? But horror is the one that people feel very empowered to be just totally like, no, fuck this. Fuck this entire thing that I don't want to engage with for X reasons. And all of it is bad because I don't like it. And that really gets, like, I get very defensive about horror films and horror filmmakers, because I'm like, yeah, but let's do a little impromptu therapy session as to why you feel empowered to dismiss an entire art form.
Well, maybe again it's to do with comedy. It's because with horror, it's a fairly binary reaction. It either gets you or it doesn't. In the same way with comedy, you either laugh or you don't. And I also think sometimes people don't like being made to feel something. Like if you kind of lose control of like, I didn't, you know, you feel embarrassed or maybe it's
But isn't that great though?
I think it's great. Yeah, I love it.
I think it's amazing.
Oh, I love it. Exactly.
That's why I like comedies as much as I love horror.
Yeah. But also horror is currently, I think, genuinely saving cinema. Like aside from Marvel, the things that makes money and people go to see on big screens is horror.
It's horror movies. Yeah. It absolutely is. And yet every other week or every other month, there's still headlines and stuff where people are like, oh, horror, apparently it's good.
It's true.
Apparently horror got invented in 2022. Before that, it was always bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that really winds me up.
Anna, oh, fuck.
Oh, no.
I've forgotten to tell you something. Shit. I should have told you. I know I was a bit late for this Zoom. And one of the reasons was I got this note. And I fucking forgot to tell you when you came online. Shit. Let me see if I can just read it out. I'll just read it to you and we'll deal with it. I'm just sorry. I should have said it about 10 minutes ago. You've died.
Oh, no.
You're dead. Dead.
Oh, dear.
Dead.
I mean, not gonna lie, I was expecting this.
Oh, okay.
I'm always looking out for death.
Okay. How did you die?
Well, I got lost, as I tend to do. Very directionally challenged.
Okay.
Don't know where I'm going most of the time. Fell into a hole, kind of side street.
Wow.
And then I got eaten by large rats because I couldn't get out of the hole in time.
Were you fully submerged in the hole or was it just like your legs?
Fully. Yeah.
Like the sewer, or you don't know where you were?
I don't know where I was. I was looking at my phone, just going in circles, trying to find which direction to go in, which I tend to do at least 4 times a day. And then just tripped.
How deep was this hole?
Well, it was taller than me. So I'm going to say at least like 7 or 8 feet.
So you're in this hole. You've got your face lit up just by the phone. Something's at your feet. You turn the screen down. Light up. Load of rats.
Yeah. Giant rats.
Chewing you from the feet downwards.
Yeah.
And you're just going down like a Jenga.
Exactly.
Wow.
Just eating through my shoes.
Quite a slow
getting day. Right to the bone. I was excruciating.
Jesus, were you screaming and no one knew where you were?
Because it was too deep.
Yeah.
And also, what would you do in London if you heard someone screaming?
Down a hole.
Yeah, exactly.
Rats, giant rats. I'd probably seal the hole up.
That's exactly what happened.
Wow.
It wasn't you.
That's dark. Do you worry about death all the time then?
I do, actually. All the time.
Always have? Or is this recent?
No, I think I've just been weirdly have had a lot of near-death experiences that I've managed to skirt around.
Wow.
Just extremely lucky.
Can you share one that might not be too upsetting?
No, none of them are upsetting.
Oh, okay.
Most of them are quite funny. So when I was a kid, I fell off a horse and I broke my back.
Oh, shit.
And then a couple of weeks later, after some intensive physical therapy, I was fine.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
I've had like bad back pain since then, but could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
I've wandered down some very dodgy streets for hours in the middle of the night. Nothing ever happened. Literally would walk for two hours down a highway, realize 2 hours later I was going in the wrong direction from
my house.
You're on the
M25.
Exactly.
When you say you worry about death, what do you mean? Like you think, oh, I could die today? Or what?
Well, I worry a lot about illness. Mm. I worry a lot about sudden death, especially like by a cyclist or something like that.
Right.
They're absolutely insane in London.
Death
so I always worry that one of them is going to run me into the canal or something.
Okay. What do you think happens when you die?
Hopefully this. Hopefully just get to record a podcast and talk about movies for all eternity.
Well,
logically, probably you just get eaten by rats.
No, you're onto something. There is a heaven. You do get to talk about movies and you are welcome there. But it's filled with your favorite thing. What's your favorite thing?
My favorite thing in the entire world?
Yeah.
Oh my God, sushi.
Wow. Okay.
Fucking love sushi.
The seats are made of rice, sticky rice. The walls are made of sashimi. It don't smell bad though. It's all fresh. The people, there's just fish people walking around. And they go, too raw for you. And and they serve you sushi, which is weird, but they're okay with it because it's heaven. And they're really excited to see you. And they want to talk about, there's like salmon roe under your feet. They want to talk to you about, there's anchovies on the wall. Anyway, they want to talk to you about your life through the medium of film. The first thing they ask you, what's the first film you remember seeing? Anna Bogatskaya?
Oh, man, I definitely saw other films before this one, but the one I remember the most, I remember like being blown away and thinking, this is a movie. I'm not quoting Harry Styles here, but kind of that was the sentiment. It was The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, wow. Where and how did you watch that?
So I grew up in Spain. And okay. I moved there when I was very, very small, and I started school there, and I didn't know the language. So I didn't know how to like speak in English or speak in Spanish or anything. And for some reason, the little square TV that I had in my room just showed, I think it was TCM, all day, all night. And they were just, they always showed old Hollywood movies. Exactly. And German MTV for some reason. So right. Who knows? But I saw this movie and just the transition, you know, from sepia to full Technicolor just blew my mind. And I was maybe like 6, maybe 5 years old. And I was like, I can't believe this just happened. What is this? It's magic. The music was amazing. All the like people with the costumes and stuff looked. I was like, oh my God, that's a giant lion that speaks and sings. This is incredible.
Are you an only child?
Yeah, I'm an only child. It all makes sense now, doesn't it?
It answers some things for sure. So that's when you fell in love with Wizard of Oz. Did you think, I want to be involved in this?
I think it was my first unofficial programming job because I took the... So I pirated the film, age 6. Yeah. I copied it off the TV onto VHS, took it into my class, like my primary school, and tried to show it to the kids. And I was like, this is amazing. And I couldn't really speak very well. I couldn't really speak English or Spanish very well at that point. And I just tried to explain to them like, no, this is magic. Like you have to wait. And they booed me out the class because it was in black and white. They would not wait until the Technicolor kicked in. And I never forgave those little fuckers. That's when I decided, this is what I need to do. Force people to watch amazing movies.
What a sad story. How about this? What's the film that made you cry the most? Do you cry?
Sometimes, but not that much at the movies, actually.
Interesting.
It takes a lot to make me cry at a movie.
Wow.
And one that made me cry the most, and I've seen this film twice, and like it is, made me cry the first time, made me cry the second time, even though I knew the scenes that hit me the most were coming, is this film called Loveless by Andrei Zvyagintsev. It's from a couple of years ago. It's like a Russian film. Oh God, it's about a kid that disappears. Yeah. And it's really sad because like the parents are always having arguments and the kid is like very neglected. And there's this one shot that absolutely fucking destroys me. Do you want me to describe the shot for you?
Yeah.
Because I might cry. The parents are having this massive argument. And you know, when it's a Russian film and everything just sounds more aggressive in Russian, it's the way the language works. Mm-hmm. And they're having this huge argument and there's a shot through with an open door and they slam the door shut. And behind the door is just this little kid, this boy who's maybe like 7 or 8 years old, just crying, but without making any noise because the parents are just arguing about like, no, you take him, just trying to pawn him off on each other. And it just absolutely destroyed me. And then the kid disappears and that's like the whole plot of the movie. But it just ended me. And even like I had to interview the director of that film on stage one time. And I watched the film and then went off to meet him like before it ended. And I was crying. And he was such a jolly, very funny, very chill person. And I was like, I'm sorry, but this, you know, you're an amazing filmmaker. This is what you do to me. And he was like, oh, whatever. You know, it's like, it's fine. It's just a movie. I was like, no, it's not. Wow. It's not.
Do you think, why do you think that one affected you where others don't? Was that your fear as an only child?
Possibly. Also, because I think it's really hard to see children, like not just in danger, but children being like, neglected, you know, when they're there, but they kind of don't matter to anyone. It's horrifying.
Do you know what? I don't know if I've told this on the podcast. When I saw Matilda, the musical on stage and everyone had said, this is really fun. It's really fun. I thought it's the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. I had to go and hide in the toilet and cry for 20 minutes afterwards. It really...
I had that with Matilda the movie.
It's like such a sad, horrible story of a kid that is not wanted. And not loved. Yeah. And there's no kind of resolution to that side of it. It's not like the parents learn anything or such a sad... Oh, I just found it... I mean, Loveless is like Matilda without songs.
Loveless is like a Russian remake of Matilda.
Yeah, Loveless is like Matilda without the fun bit.
But yeah, it's the same thing. I had the same... Matilda was one of my favorite films growing up, and it was like the same thing. I didn't cry because I had powers. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll have powers if I read enough books. I didn't, sadly.
Well, the night is young. What what film scares you the most? Here's the big one for you.
Well, so I kind of went way back into the past as well. It's not the film that scares me the most now, although it still freaks me out. It's the original It. Did you ever see this one?
Yes.
The one with Tim Curry. Yeah.
Really scary, yes.
Technically like a TV movie, but whatever. I'm not going to get pedantic here. But
it's a mini series, but I'm going to let you have it as a film because you did used to be able to get it at the video shop as one thing. It kind of looked like a film. You can have it.
Thank you. I got shown this at a sleepover by a friend when I was like 9 or 10. And her parents were really into horror and let us watch stuff all the time. So I used to go over to her house just because she had this genuine wall of VHSs of horror films. And she put on, I think, Child's Play. And then the second one that night was It. And I lasted about 10 minutes before I started screaming, full on, grabbed my head, like covered my face, was screaming, would not stop screaming until they took the VHS out of the player and out of the room. And I did not watch that series film until I was like 20. And I fully made it like, I'm in uni, I'm going to sit by myself, every light is on, I'm going to see this one, and I need to get over it. I need to get over this clown thing. I need to get over Tim Curry. I've seen Rocky Horror Picture Show. I love Tim Curry. Just focus on that. And I watched it and it still freaked me out. The effects are cheesy and all that stuff, but like there's something about him where he's like, wow, you're like a demon.
Yeah, he's unhinged. He's like, he seems not safe.
Yeah, like he seems like if you walk up to him on the street, you're like, oh no. You know, like when sometimes you get just a genuine bad vibe from someone, you're like, I don't want to be in the same room as you. Like you're giving me serial killer vibes. Yeah.
Did you watch the remake, the reboot, whatever?
Yeah, I did. I loved
it. Did you like it? Yeah.
I did love it. Yeah. Well, it's very different.
Yeah. What's the, if I may ask, in the last 5 years, what's the scariest film you've seen?
It's one that I loved as Host.
Oh, Host is fucking great.
Host is amazing. And I saw, I got like an early link of it because I'm friends with some of the people who made it. And I got a link and I was sitting at my desk watching it on my laptop, which is the best way to watch it, I think.
Yeah.
And like there's a big window by my desk. So it's usually very bright. And I didn't notice that the light had gone down. That it had been, that the sun had gone down. And I was so like headphones fully in. And I was fucking terrified. Like I was jumpy. I screamed several times. There's this thing, like there's a thing above my desk that is sort of like an attic door. I've never been up there because that's like how horror movies begin. Yeah. And there's the same thing in the film as well. And like a body falls out at one point. And I looked up and like it made a noise. It was just the perfect environment. It absolutely fucked me up. And it was just, everything was perfect. The laptop, the desk, the light going down.
Yeah. So you watch horrors on your own a lot, do you?
Yeah, most of the time. I don't actually, like a lot of my friends are work or do horror stuff, but I still prefer to watch it by myself. Either by myself or in a big cinema with a crowd, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. What is the film that people don't like? It's not critically acclaimed, but you love it. You don't care what anyone says.
It's going to be a really sharp turn for this one.
Okay.
It's an 80s film called White Nights. Have you heard of this one?
Tell me who's in it.
It's Mikhail Baryshnikov, a ballet dancer, and Gregory Hines, a tap dancer. And they play...
I mean, what, a buddy cop?
No, they're two political defectors. Baryshnikov defected from the Soviet Union to America, and Gregory Hines' character defected from America to the Soviet Union. And they find themselves in this like holding place, and they reconcile their differences. And I believe the film tells us, solve the Cold War via the medium of dance.
That's a great pitch for a film.
It's so good. Oh, that's like, just amazing dancing.
It's like The Holiday with dancing and politics.
Exactly. Yeah. And none of they can't really act, but they're absolutely amazing dancers.
What a great idea for a film.
It's got Isabella Rossellini in it as well.
Oh, fantastic. Great show. That's a deep cut. What about the film that you used to love? You loved it, but then you've watched it recently and you've gone, ah, nuts. I don't like this anymore.
So I was thinking about this, and I think this applies to a lot of his films, but it's Requiem for a Dream.
Okay. I mean, that's a big film in my life. Let's talk about it.
It's a big film in my life too. Like, when did you first see it?
I first saw it. So I was at university, and the first great love of my life, we'd seen the trailer, and I liked Darren Aronofsky, and I'd seen Pi, and I was really excited. I thought the trailer was amazing, and I bought two tickets to like a preview. So I saw it right when it came out. And the day we were going to go see it, we broke up, and I was so sad, and I was in my dorm, like, so sad. And then I was like, am I just going to stay here and be sad forever? Or am I going to go see that film that I was excited to go see? And I went to see Requiem for a Dream, and it really cheered me up. And I left the cinema like, oh, I felt really excited. I think it's a happy ending, that film.
Yeah, life's not that bad considering Requiem for a Dream.
No, I think that at the end of the film, everyone's lives is going to be better.
Have you seen it recently?
Well, spoiler for people, skip forward if you've not seen the film. At the end, he's chopped off his arm, right?
Yeah.
He's going to be fine because he's not going back to her. He's going to start cleaning up.
He's in jail though.
Yeah, but he'll get out soon. He's not going to be in there for long. He's going to get out soon. He's going to go rescue Jennifer Connelly. They're going to be fine. Ellen Burstyn is in a coma dream where she thinks she's happy, so she's fine. And Marlon Wayans is going to be fine. He's going to get out of prison. They'll have cleaned up and then we're going to start a new life and be happy. It's a really happy ending.
It's a very positive sequel.
Yeah.
I just, like, I was a teenager when that film came out and I loved it. Like, I loved all those sort of like boy movies. You know, the very intense, very like violent, very miserable movies. So I was like, yeah, that's my shit. I've had like Scarface on my wall and stuff. Like my favorite film was Fight Club when I was 15. It's like never been in a fight.
or a club.
Exactly. But I just think I loved it. It was like a personality trait for me. Loved the soundtrack, had it on CD soundtrack and everything. But I just think that it's a bit of that genre of film where it's like, it's just misery porn. Hmm. Like the more I think
seen
about it.
In many, many years. I'm sure I would not love it now, probably.
Yeah,
it is quite dark.
Yeah, it's very dark and I just don't see the point of the darkness. You know what I mean? Like if I don't see the point of the darkness, it's just misery for misery's sake. And I'm like, oh, you're just like torturing your characters because you're getting off on torturing them.
Oh, but you're forgetting the happy ending.
well, yeah. I guess that tells you everything you need to know about my outlook on life. And yours.
It's very... I think my guess would be Requiem for a Dream. It's so well made. And it was so... The music and the editing and the performance is so good. But I do think it's the sort of film that's been cannibalized, like as in that music was then used on Sky Sports forever and the music became a thing that's everywhere, and the way it was edited, this kind of hip-hop editing he called it, has become so ubiquitous, and so it probably isn't what it once was, but I think it was really powerful and like felt new and cool. And but you're right, it's pretty fucking miserable.
It felt like very edgy, you know, at that time. But I really, really resent any film that makes me root for Jared Leto. Because I have an unnatural, very, very intense hatred for Jared Leto.
Why? What did he do to you? Did you join his cult?
No. Although I would love to write an expose of that cult. It sounds incredibly stupid. No, I just think he's one of the worst things that's been in our screens for the last like 30 years. I hate him so much.
Well, but it's got Jennifer Connelly, who's one of my favorites, and Ellen Burstyn, who might be my favorite.
And Marlon Wayans, who is
he's so good in it.
He's such an underrated dramatic actor. Like, I really wish he'd been given more drama roles because he's so great.
He's really great. Good answer. What is the film that means the most to you. Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but the experience you had around seeing it will always make it special to you, Anna Bogatskaya.
This involves quite a few of former Films to Be Buried With guests.
Oh.
When I first moved to London, I was a baby 17-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I know it sounds illogical, but I lived in Soho for a year because it was the cheapest place I could find. And I lived in like a living room in a shared apartment with two other students.
Where were you? What street?
Old Compton Street.
Wicked.
Yeah, it was great.
What a life.
I know. But all I did was just go to uni and go to the Prince Charles Cinema. Because
nice.
It was within walking distance and they had tickets for a pound.
Where was uni? Where did you go?
When I was here, was Central St. Martin's.
Okay.
Like, you know where the Big Foils is? That is used to be the building.
Oh, wow. Is that art school?
Yeah.
Did you do art?
I did photography.
Ah, cool.
Yeah.
That must have been a fucking great time. Living in Soho, going to the Prince Charles.
Doing photography. Yeah, it was great. All I did, though, was mainly be in the dark room, go from one dark room to another dark room to watch movies. I didn't really speak to anyone. I had like one friend.
Did you speak to the people you lived with?
Occasionally. One of them was a very strange girl who described herself as a Marxist. Yeah. She did philosophy at UCL. She was an American. Mm-hmm. And one time I came back home from the PCC and I found her in my room, which to be fair was the living room. So the kitchen was there, but they didn't really go in there.
Yeah.
She was in my room at the table eating steak in the dark. So I just turned on the light and she was there just fully eating just steak on a plate in pitch black darkness. And then even though I got home and I was like, great, I'm here. Bye. She stayed until she finished the steak and would not leave.
That is odd.
Certainly odd. Yeah.
Maybe she's a vampire.
Possibly. And then she disappeared sometimes for days and we didn't know whether she was going to pay rent or not. And we went into her room and it was just covered in shit. The floor was just covered in litter and debris and just pieces of food and stuff. It's horrible.
Where is she now?
In the underworld? No idea. I have no idea.
She sounds like a vampire.
What if she's listening?
Well, yeah, exactly. You be careful. Just remember, you were also saying how great she was, right? You really enjoyed.
She was wonderful, yeah. She had great style. Great hair. She did have great hair.
So go on.
So I used to go to the PCC a lot and I'd never really seen any Q&As or any filmmakers like in the flesh before that. And when Hot Fuzz was being released on DVD, Edgar Wright did this whole day of screenings and events at the PCC where he was introducing the films. He showed like Hard Boiled and a bunch of other stuff that I'd never heard of before. And I spent the whole day and it all cost like, I don't know, £5, something ridiculous. Yeah. And the last event of the day was this just live commentary of Hot Fuzz. I hadn't seen Hot Fuzz at this point. I'd seen Shaun of the Dead.
Right.
And I went to see it just by myself. I didn't know anyone. I had like one friend who just wanted to watch Will and Grace with me. He didn't want to go to like any of these screenings. And I was there and I was like queuing for hours. And then I sat like in second row. And this is everyone who's in the movie, like Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar, Olivia Colman was there. I think Patty Considine was there. Like all of these incredible actors. And they were just talking through the movie, talking about how they made it, telling jokes, having beers. But I'd never seen so many people who made films in the flesh right there, like two seats in front of me. And I'd never seen a cinema do that. And I was like, I can't believe this is a thing you do and people can go to it. I want to do this thing. I have no idea what it's called, but I want to do this thing. And years later, like 10 years later, when I was working at the BFI, I was organizing the 10th anniversary reunion of Hot Fuzz. And all those same people were there to do the big onstage event. And I was having this big moment with a friend of mine who now runs the PCC. So we were talking about like that event. And we're like, dude, you were there too? I was there too. And it was about 10 years ago. And we're both like, that is the day he, I think, quit his production job and started working in the Prince Charles Cinema. And that was the day I was like, I don't want to be in art school. I want to be in film. There was this That's momentous, so nice thing. It's cute.
Do you want to make films?
No.
Okay.
I wanted to be in film, but I never wanted to. I've met enough directors that I know I'm not one of them. So I was very clear. I was like, no, I want to do this, but I don't need to be one of them.
Right. And not, you don't want to DP the films.
I was a photographer for a while.
Yeah.
But then I started living with a photographer, so I stopped taking photographs.
Right. Interesting. What is the film you most relate to, Anna Popitskaya?
It's going to be so predictable. It's Lady Bird, Greta Gerwig's film.
That's my answer as well. You can have it. It's fantastic.
Dude, I related to that film so hard that the week after I saw it for the first time, I dyed my hair pink. I was like this, and I was already in my mid, late 20s. And I was like, no, I'm having an existential crisis. This is me. I am her. I need to be.
Lady Bird.
Yeah.
What a film.
I love it.
It's such a good film.
She's just so angry and also wants to do so many things, you know? Do you remember that feeling of like, I've never lost this feeling of just, I'm just impatient to do more things.
Yeah, I have this still.
I love it.
I'd say that feeling's only got worse because of, you know, death.
That's true. Yeah. Aging, death. You get one book deal, you want three more. You get one show, you want to make like six others.
You're just like, we're running out of time, got to make all these things. I love Lady Bird so much. And I think the phone call she makes to her mum at the end is fucking profound. Like, I think it's a really, I don't know what the word is. In the same way that I think Inside Out is the deepest film ever made about the human brain. Like, I think the end of Lady Bird, which makes that call, is so like, so important. It's just wonderful. What a magical film.
That's a film I've cried at every single time I've seen it in the cinema too.
Yeah.
Just makes me weep every time.
That's fair.
It's a very, it's a special one for me because aside of the hair pink job that I had, it was also the first ever proper interview that I did, Greta Gerwig.
Wow.
So I was interviewing her. Yeah. Just threw my, I throw myself into the deep end all the time. I don't, I'm just like, no, never done this. Fine. I'll just start it. But like in a big way. Never written an article. Gonna write a book. Nice. But it's, that's not true. I had written many articles, but still.
Yeah.
Like, and I just loved her. She was everything I imagined her to be. When I went to interview her at some hotel in Soho, it was like, you know, she was in a gown because she'd just done the premiere, but barefoot. And she was so sweet and warm and chill. And I was like, oh God, I'm either like doing a fine interview or I'm absolutely falling in love with this woman right now. And it's very patently obvious.
It's such a big risk, isn't it? Meeting these people and when they're wonderful, my God. I mean, look, you've had this podcast. When I had Barry Jenkins on, dear me.
Yeah.
What a guy. I was so excited about that. But I also was like, this could go very badly if he's a dickhead. He was beyond amazing.
But he's not a dickhead.
He's not a dickhead. He's fantastic.
I don't think you should be allowed to be that talented and that nice at the same time.
Well, it's unusual.
It is. It should be legal.
That's why you get fearful when you meet someone like him.
Exactly.
What is the sexiest film ever made, Anna Bogatskaya? I imagine you've seen some stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Do you know what? This answer has not changed since 2002. It's Secretary.
Great, great, great.
Secretary, Maggie Gyllenhaal, James Spader, this whole like kinky relationship that they have, this beautiful like fairy tale romance that involves a lot of role play and spanking. It's just, it's literally the both the most romantic and one of the horniest films I've ever seen.
Now, it hasn't come up in a while on this podcast, but it did come up an awful lot. And it's always women that have this as their sexiest film. And I also think there hasn't really been a film close to Secretary since.
No.
It's quite a one-off. 50 Shades of Grey isn't close to it. There's no, it is quite a unique mainstream film.
It's a,
it not? And why do you think it works so well, particularly for women, clearly based on the research I've carried out on this podcast?
I genuinely think there's a whole part of it that's just James Spader.
Right.
I think he's sort of a massive sex symbol for women in a way that a lot of people just don't get.
Right.
And there's something, I was watching clips of it to remind myself. I mean, James Spader, like I could just answer every single question of this with a James Spader film, but there's just something, he's not, you know, like the best looking man in the world, mm-hmm. but he just speaks so quietly and so firmly and is just such a weirdo in his own skin. I love it. But he's had this energy from like Pretty in Pink.
Yeah.
Like Steph in Pretty in Pink. I don't give a shit about Andrew, what's his face?
McGuff.
Yeah. In that, I just want her to be with Steph. It's going to end up terribly, but it's going to be great fun. Let's not even talk about Crash because I think that's too much.
We can talk about Crash. It's never come up on this.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's never come up.
That is definitely one of the hottest films that's ever been made.
Fair enough. I went to see it just after it had been banned or unbanned or whatever it was. And I went to see it. There weren't many people in the cinema. And one guy was clearly not enjoying it at all. And the moment where he has sex with the wound in her leg, yeah. the man a few rows in front went, "Oh, for fuck's sake."
I love hecklers. I know I shouldn't because they're very disruptive, but I love cinema hecklers. They get so invested, they're so annoyed.
Oh, for fuck's sake, he's fucking wounded her leg now. What is this?
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah. Meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12? Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my name is Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
There's troubling boners, worrying wideons. Mm-hmm. What is the film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should? And I'm impressed that Crash didn't make that cut.
I mean, it's got to get real problematic. I don't lie. I never lie. Have to be honest.
Please.
I hope I don't get any tweets about this, but...
no tweets.
Robert De Niro in Cape Fear.
That is such a good answer. That is a proper answer.
It's an honest, I actually consulted this with a friend. I'm like, it's too bad, isn't it? It's terrible. It is objectively terrible. It's very worrying.
Look, you can explain it to me. I think I get it. Like, look, A, he's jacked up in it. He looks great. He's in the best shape of his life.
So true.
He's scary, which can be sexy. And he's, you know, Juliette Lewis is banging to him. So
she's a teenager in the film.
Yeah, yeah. Tell me, do you have any more analysis on this?
I think it was the me being a teenager, very into boy movies and Scorsese movies. And Robert De Niro is everywhere. And he was in best shape of his life. But yeah, it's the tattoos. It's the psycho energy. It's the slicked back hair. Those shirts that he wears that are like bowling shirts.
Yeah.
And white linen pants. I know, it's don't even. It's like I'm genuinely terrified of rewatching that film. What makes it even more troubling though is that I watched, remember that Simpsons episode that is basically a shot by shot remake of Cape Fear?
Sideshow Bob, yeah.
Yeah. I watched that before I watched Cape Fear.
And it aroused you with Sideshow Bob as well.
Well, it made me go and discover the film. Way too young an age.
I love Cape Fear. There's something in it that I get nervous of talking about it because it's, we'll see. If you've ever seen the making of Cape Fear, have you ever seen that?
No, I don't think no.
So like on the DVD, there's like a really comprehensive making of. Mm-hmm. And there's a thing in it where I'm like, this would never happen today. And it's extraordinary how it's talked about in the making of, which is, you know, the scene where Robert De Niro goes to find Juliette Lewis in her school and they're alone on the stage and she fancies him and she is a teenager and he comes towards her and he's sort of says, you can't trust your parents sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then he puts his thumb in her mouth and she blushes.
Yeah.
And that wasn't planned. He didn't tell her he was going to do that. And
really?
She also was in love with him. Like, she was a teenage girl. She was like slightly obsessed with Robert De Niro. And I think he said to Martin Scorsese, I'm going to try something, just keep rolling. And the reaction is so genuine. She fully blushes and it's a very like intense and quite troubling scene or whatever. And everyone is talking about it in the behind the scenes, from the editors to Juliette Lewis, to everyone is kind of going, oh, it was this amazing moment. It was this thing, it was that. And I watched that and I was going, it's such a
power move.
You wouldn't be allowed to, I don't think you'd be allowed to do that anymore. Mm. I'm not sure if it's right. Like, as in the whole thing's quite worrying when you watch the making of. But at the same time, Juliette Lewis is saying, oh, it was amazing. It was so exciting and thrilling. You know, I don't know. I feel like that is a problematic making of moment.
All of it is problematic.
Yeah.
The performance is problematic.
Yeah.
How intense it is problematic. Robert De Niro's performance is problematic. Every single bit of it. There's also something about that character. Like, I went to see the 60s version, the original version with Robert Mitchum.
Also
and
great.
It's like, it's fucking great. It has that same vibe to it, where it's like you can't stop watching Mitchum as that like sociopathic stalker killer guy. And there is something about some actors where it's like, yeah, you may be playing the worst person alive, and yet it's still, the charisma is just, it's off the charts.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of my type got defined by Robert De Niro and Cape Fear.
Sideshow Bob, Robert De Niro, James Spader.
Exactly.
The geezer from Twilight.
No. Absolutely never.
What is objectively the greatest film of all time?
Silence of the Lambs.
Great answer.
Singing in the Rain, yes. Perfect.
Yes.
The Shining, perfect. Silence of the Lambs, it's not a bad shot in that film, you know?
No.
Everything is just spot on. And it's so unassumingly perfect as well. Like, you don't think of it. You're like, oh, 2001. Yeah, it's perfect. Great. But it's very, you know, flashy, perfect.
Yeah.
But Silence of the Lambs, every time I watch it like every Christmas, which is something I told Jodie Foster and I think it creeped it out a bit. but it's just, it works so much. And every single time I watch it, I get something new out of it. It's like a workplace drama. It's a serial killer movie. It's a procedural. It is a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a portrait of a serial killer. It's Anthony Hopkins' like best performance. I love it. It's so amazingly shot as well.
Mm.
It's glorious.
It's fucking great. It's really great. What is the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
If this film ever comes on, anywhere.
Yeah.
Or if I'm feeling like hungover or down, I will put this on. Almost Famous.
Ah, nice film.
It's lovely. It's lovely. Nice film. It's, you know, the 70s. It's rock stars. It's music critics. It's little baby Patrick Fugit. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's just great. It's so watchable.
Billy Crudup, one of my favorite actors.
Yeah, he's incredible in it. And yeah. Kate Hudson, absolutely yeah. charming. Everyone is in it. The music's kind of good as well.
Yeah.
Also that tiny dancer scene.
Amazing. 1-0-10 Grace. I'm on Drugs. It's got so many really yeah. great set pieces in it. The ending's beautiful. What a
yes.
movie.
Endlessly rewatchable.
Now, you tell me this, and let's not dwell in the negative, but what's the worst film you've ever seen?
Green Book. I've actually never finished it because I walked out of the premiere.
Oh dear. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that. You know that was the surprise film?
Yeah, that's when I saw it.
Oh, I saw it there too. I'd never heard of it, weirdly. And it started, and I don't think it has the title at the beginning. So the whole film, I was like, I don't know what this is.
Well, they had the actors introduce it.
Did they? I thought they came on at the end.
No, because I didn't stay till the end. I walked out. I was so furious.
Right.
I hated Maybe it so did. Much. Although I went a while ago, I went on a date with someone who spent 20 minutes trying to convince me that Green Book was a better film than Parasite.
Oh my God. I'm surprised you lasted 20 minutes on that date.
I got very angry.
Did you kiss?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. In my defense... He was extremely hot. And that was the only reason why I allowed.
Really hot.
Yeah. That's some shit opinions.
Did you have like hate kissing?
Yeah. It was a hate one night stand.
That's great. I'll show you fucking Green Book. Lovely. Yes, Green Book.
Terrible film. Mahershala Ali is always good. That's it.
Enough said. What about... humor. What made you laugh the most?
There's many films that make me laugh a lot. The one that will never fail is In the Loop.
Right.
I just love Iannucci. I love that sense of humor.
Yeah.
I love Malcolm Tucker.
Yeah.
I love him yelling at everything and everyone. I love cursing. And that just takes it to a whole new level.
It's very bleak In the Loop, but it is fun. It's sort of fun. But it is very dark.
When you really stop and think about it, it's yeah. really dark. But also you can just have it on and always have a giggle.
Yeah. It's really good. That was pre-Veep, right?
Yeah.
I think that's when he proved to himself he could make this work in America.
Exactly. And then Death of Stalin, I loved as yeah, well afterwards. It's very fun.
That's really great.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree, or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right! They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre, and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia, and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu.
Thanks, Maureen.
Hello, my neighbour Maureen. What's this I hear about you getting a promotion at the office? Didn't you just get promoted last month? It's all thanks to Canva. I've been nailing every meeting with AI-powered Canva presentations. Isn't that Canva's AI slide generator where you just describe your presentation in a few words and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds? That's right. And to top it off, I use Magic Write, Canva's AI text generator, to perfect my points. Sounds brilliant, Maureen. No more copying and pasting from other programs. No more app switching. Can Canva Docs with Magic Write generate any text you want for work? Yes. Sales proposals, marketing plans? Yeah? meeting agendas, ratings of all 12 Muppet movies using the extensive point system that I developed at age 12. Anyone can save time with Canva's AI-powered tools. Generate your draft fast with Canva Docs at canva.com, designed for work.
Oh, thanks, my neighbor, Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hey, guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Anna Bogatskaya, what a delight. Thank you so much for doing this. You've been brilliant. However, when you were lost and you were looking at your phone and it was night and you went 2 hours one way, 2 hours the other way, you realised you were in all the wrong streets. Then you fell down a hole. The hole was 9 foot. It was 2 foot taller than you. You were stuck in this hole. It was really dark. You were like, oh, bloody hell. You had the light on your face. You feel something around your feet. Your shoes, something's at your shoes. You turn the light down. Giant rats eating your shoes. You scream, help, help. I'm walking around with a coffin. You know what I like? I sort of peek down. I can't really see you. All I can hear is screaming and something getting shorter and shorter as they eat your feet and then your shins and then your thighs. And I think, this don't look good. So I cover it up. I seal you in. Luckily, you die of suffocation right before they get to your head.
Oh, that's nice.
So then the screaming stops. The guy's probably fine now. And I lift up the thing. And I go, oh, there's Anna. I've got a coffin with me. You know what I'm like? And I see all these rats, they go, shoo! And they go, oh, sorry, and they run off. And the tragedy is if you'd said that to them, they'd have left you alone. So I have to get all the bits of you out, but like there's dead rats around you because some of them exploded from eating so much of you. There's bits of fucking bones and mud and shit around. Like, fucking hell. I scoop all of your bits out, stuff you in the coffin, but there's more of you than I was expecting. In my head, you were only 6 foot, but in real life, you're seven. Stuff you in the coffin. There's no room in this coffin. There's literally enough space for me to slide one DVD into the side for you to take across to the other side. And on the other side, it's movie night every night. What film are you taking to show the sushi people on movie night in heaven when it's your go, Anna Bogatskaya?
Zodiac by David Fincher.
I mean, why not? But why? But also why?
It's a perfect movie. It is a perfect movie.
Agreed.
Also, I want to take the DVD for the Fincher audio commentaries.
Okay.
For the 4 or 5 audio commentaries that they all have, Jake Gyllenhaal, Mark Ruffalo, Robert Downey Jr., the writer, Fincher himself, like his audio commentaries, this is the deepest of deep film nerd cuts. His audio commentaries are so priceless because he does not give a flying fuck about anyone else's opinion and he goes full out. It's incredible. They're so funny. So yeah, I would watch that. I would watch that film and then I'd watch it again for eternity with the different audio commentaries on.
That's a great, great choice. What a time. Anna Bogatskaya, your book is coming out. Unlikable Female Characters. Is there anything else people should listen to or look out for from you?
So the book is out in May in the States and on June the 9th in the UK. And you can subscribe to my horror film history podcast, The Final Girls. Or if you're watching Succession like everyone else on the planet, you can listen to my Succession podcast, The Successionistas. And there is a lot more of podcasting going on, but we could spend another hour with me just enumerating them all. Just follow me on Twitter. That's all there.
Anna Bogatskaya, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you so much, Brett.
You've been brilliant. Have a wonderful day. See you soon.
You too.
Goodbye.
So that was episode 252. Head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the extra 20 minutes of chat, secrets and video with Anna. Remember to watch Ted Lasso and Shrinking on Apple TV Plus. Go to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating, but don't write about the show. I don't care about the show. Write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's a lovely thing to read. My neighbour Maureen loves it. She always laughs, she always cries, and it's really appreciated. Thank you so much to Anna for giving me her time. Remember to read her book, Unlikable Female Characters. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to iHeartMedia and Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. Come and join me next week for another stormer of a guest that you're going to love. So that is it for now. I hope you have a lovely week. And in the meantime, please be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted, and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.